So can I just take up the next however many minutes of this podcast talking about how amazing he is?
Because I'll cut you off eventually.
Aaron, your right arm is not attached to the shoulder anymore. I'm good.
I'm lefty now, Skip.
Delete the Tweet has such a nice ring to it. It's rhyme.
It does, doesn't it? And welcome to episode 16 of Artificial Turf Wars, where a pop-up is as good as a strikeout. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined tonight by Josh Howsam. How you doing, Josh?
I'm good. How about you?
I am fantastic. Chris has sent me a telegram, it appears, something about...
being stuck in the 1800s, which is why he can't make it.
It is unfortunate when your time machine malfunctions. All right, moving right along. We have a upbeat week to talk about in Blue Jays land. We have a 5-2 record. We have the bats hitting things with runners on and over the fence, and it's a foreign concept. We're going to talk about everybody pretty much in the rotation, the scuffling J-Hap and the we don't know what he's doing exactly yet Marcus Stroman, and then the always excellent Marco Estrada and Aaron Sanchez. How long is Aaron Sanchez bound for this rotation? I don't know. We're going to go to listener questions. We have a cliche of the week. Yes. Are you protecting your plate? And then we have a little do-over. And as usual, our final thoughts. And that should take us through another Artificial Turf Wars edition. We will begin with the bats. This is a weird team. Because last week we called them out for actually being a team that really couldn't hit, didn't we?
Was that last week or 2 weeks ago?
I'm pretty sure it was last week. Last week was like, okay, fine. Finally, it's not early. They don't know how to hit.
Oops.
It was early, maybe. Or maybe this is the fluke. You never know. You know, it takes so long to figure out how long a fluke takes to not be a fluke. You understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying.
So they scored, I believe it was... 11 runs and 10 runs and 11 runs against Baltimore. But they also scored 0 runs
well, a couple of times in it. The last one there and the 0 runs game were both against Philly.
But they were also shut out by Detroit the previous week. So this team knows how to score double-digit runs.
Or not at all.
That night that they got shut out, though, that was... Wasn't that they gave Encarnacion the night off?
Well, it wasn't a night off so much as he was hurt. He injured his thumb sliding into the base.
I see. But as a result, all of the offense evaporated.
Yeah. Well, I think he's hit a home run in each of the last few games. So, yeah, that was pretty much the offense. I mean, he's on absolute fire. He's hit 7 home runs in his last 12 games. That's quite good in case... people are not sure about it.
And he does this every year. He does something like this. And then people look back on the whole season and they go, oh, 38, 40 home runs, whatever, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood and so many runs driven in and good batting average, good OBP. And people every year forget that Edwin Encarnacion, when he's cold, is ice cold. And when he's hot, it's like the surface of the sun, and you can't throw him anything he doesn't destroy. The mistake pitch that he hit, pardon me, for a home run in the first inning. Even Pat Tabler knew that you shouldn't throw a pitch there. He literally, one pitch before, he goes, and see that pitch on the inner half? That should be the only one that he sees for the rest of his time in Philly. That was just to show him that they could throw one inside. And then Ruiz moves to the inner half, and Edwin just crushes the pitch. It was one of those courtesy one steps with the outfielder.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well,
yeah, but the thing is, he's not the only guy who's hitting right now.
True.
You know, Donaldson is heated back up, and Kevin Pillar has decided he wants to join the offense again because he, I mean, even for Kevin Pillar, he was hitting extremely poorly.
Oh, yeah. He and you could see it with the pitches he was chasing, even for Kevin Pillar. Like, when it's when it's in the dirt in the opposite batter's box and Pillar can't quite hold up, it's like, okay, reel it in a little bit, Kev.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but in his last 22 games, which is not a super tiny sample, it's still small, he's hitting .291, .322, .477. And you'll notice the on-base percentage was higher than the batting average. His three walks and hit by pitch in there. I mean, those numbers, for his defense, if he can do that over a whole season, he would be an elite player. And obviously, he's not going to. He's, for someone who swings that much, he's going to be streaky. But when he's on his streaks like he is right now, and he had a couple of them last year, he's really, really good.
Yeah, he's a strange player. But I just, because of that, I just can't get behind him. I wish I could. But I just, he's so, I guess it's the lack of discipline when he's running cold, right? When Encarnacion's running cold, to me, it looks like he sees the pitch he wants and his timing is off. So it's a good pitch, it's a hittable pitch in the zone, but for whatever reason, he doesn't hit it. He fouls it off, he swings through a pitch or two. Kevin Pillar just goes hacking. And
I hope we're not trying to hold Kevin Pillar to an Edwin Encarnacion standard.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying why I get frustrated is because it's that there is no discipline, apparently, when he's struggling. He's so desperate to put the bat on the ball that, like, everything goes out the window as to where that ball might be. And yeah, surrounded by hitters who are very zone conscious, Donaldson and anybody above him in the lineup knows where a strike is and where a ball is. Even Michael Saunders and Justin Smoke, as much as they have their problems, all know when they're being pitched around. And believe it or not, Kevin Pillar gets pitched around, but it doesn't matter most of the time.
No, it doesn't. He has three home runs in the last eight games, and they're all on pitches on the inner third. I don't know why anybody would ever throw Kevin Pillar a pitch on the inner third of the plate. Because with his twisting swing, that's the only way he can hit it hard. Yeah. If you throw him a pitch low and away, he can reach out and dump it over the second baseman's head, which he's done a few times, but that's just a single.
Yep. You said it last year, I think, when he was
his
tear.
Yes.
Why would you pitch inside? Also, would you throw him fastballs?
It's also a good question. But anyway, teams are doing it right now, and he's hitting them, so that is good.
I hope they don't listen to this. Anybody listens to this, because now they've got a hint that they could cool him off again. You can't score 11 runs and not have everybody in the lineup doing something positive. Russell Martin looks better. Mm-hmm. I think he's healthier because he's started throwing runners out again, too.
Yeah, that was the weirdest part, which, again, gives credence to what you were just saying about him being hurt. But last year he led the league in caught stealing percentage, and this year I think it was, I can't remember the exact number, but it was in the 20s, consecutive stolen bases successful against him.
And he was dead last in percentage, even when you factor in the whole year. So
yep.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me. So that's better. Obviously, Michael Saunders, which I pointed out when I saw it on Twitter and I added it to the recap the other night. Seventh inning or later, Michael Saunders is hitting like Ted Williams, which is unreal.
Anyway, so I guess the general point is that the offense is starting to click a little bit more close to what we expected. And now Tulowitzki had a bit of a setback, but he's playing again, and they do expect him this time to actually be back Monday, so that could even be a nice little boost.
It's interesting that we have not particularly missed Tulowitzki between his depressed numbers and the fact that Darwin Barney has been hitting out of his mind. It's been really weird to have
Tulowitzki. Although the second baseman weren't hitting, so it was still a negative.
Of course. Devin Travis appears to be not hitting for power, certainly, but his timing is improving. He has dumped a bunch into right field over the last few games.
Yeah, but anyway, just as we were saying, like, the offense is playing better.
You want to start talking about your favorite guy, but first we have to talk about Jay Happ and Marcus Stroman, who are, as the offense heats up, we have observed the humanizing of some of the rotation members. So Happ got lit up in Detroit. And we said, well, that's because Detroit hits lefties really, really well. Did he fare particularly well in his next start?
Well, I mean, he gave up four runs in seven innings against Baltimore, eight hits, no walks. He gave up three home runs, but, I mean, if anybody watched that series, you saw the way the ball was flying out of the dome. I think that was actually a good start. Baltimore is a really, really good hitting team, and especially a very powerful team.
Yeah.
So, you know, 7 innings, 4 runs, that's not so bad. So really, I think saying that he is scuffling is overstated. He just got rocked by the Tigers.
It just seems like he was not so homer prone, but you're right. The Baltimore hit home runs off of every single person all day, every day, and made it look like nothing.
They were even hitting home runs as righties against Aaron Sanchez, which doesn't happen. So it was just the ball was flying.
I know we're not a fan of pitcher wins around here, but I like deliciously ironic pitcher wins. Aaron Sanchez, 8 innings, 2 runs allowed, 12 strikeouts. Like, was it one walk or no walks back in Detroit?
His last start against the Tigers.
Yeah. No win. But he gave up 6 and lasted like 5, 5 1/3. Somewhere in there against Baltimore, because the Blue Jays managed to win 11-6, he gets a W.
They won that one 10-9. But
oh,
yeah.
Sorry, that was the 10-9 game.
Yeah,
my bad. Yeah, a W. Congratulations, Aaron. I guess that's the one that you didn't get the other time. We're gonna hand you just sort of a freebie. All right, I'm gonna let you talk about Marco Estrada.
So can I just take up the next however many minutes of this podcast talking about how amazing he is?
Because I'll cut you off eventually.
Well, I mean, there's running out of really things to say about him. He just does the same thing every night. He goes out there, fastball, change up, every now and then a cutter and a curveball to keep you honest, then fastball, change up, and he gets pop-ups and he beats you. He tied the major league record for consecutive starts of 6 innings or more with 5 or fewer hits. This is a guy who throws 88 miles an hour, not giving up hits. He's awesome. And it's real, right? I mean, at this point, it's been over a season of this. It's kind of hard to say it's a fluke.
It is. And again, it's still weird that he got better than last year. Like, it's hard to process because everybody thought that batting average against balls in play against is
both.
Under 200. Both are very low. But a lot of guys, you can limit batting average against by striking a lot of people out.
That's true.
But batting average of balls in play, it's really difficult in the long run to effectively do that. So much so that the best season by a qualified starter ever on batting average and balls in play was Marco Estrada in 2015.
And this year it's 30 points lower or 25 points lower.
Yeah. So I had a brief discussion with a Red Sox fan on Twitter.
It was Matt
Corey.
Yeah.
Who is a friend of the podcast. And he said to me, this is why I don't believe in him. And I basically said to him, well, I do. I don't think it's going to stay under 200 all year. Just seems crazy. But on the flip side, let's just have this discussion at the end of July and we'll see who's crazy. Because I really don't, there's no precedent for that, right?
Well, and I think that he is always going to have extremely low BABIPs. I mean, he was never high. But the reason he's going to have low is because he gets up all these fly balls, and they're either outs or home runs, neither of which count as batting average on balls in play. You know, he just doesn't give up hard line drive contact because of the way his ball stays up.
And again, there are a lot of extreme fly ball pitchers in baseball, but none of them have a sub 200 batting average on balls in play. You know, you look at, I was looking at Koji Uehara because of the one at bat I wrote this week, and he's like 23% ground ball rate, but his BABIP isn't that low. It is.
Well, I think the best comp is actually Chris Young. I mean, he's obviously 6 inches or 10 inches taller than Marco Estrada, but last year his batting average on balls in play was 209. Because like Estrada, he's an extreme up in the zone high spin fastball guy, so gets a lot of pop ups. And it also helps that he was playing in Kauffman Stadium, but the year before that, 238.
So, but it is a long way from 238 down to 190, is all I'm saying.
I said the reason it's going to always be low. I didn't say it was going to be historically low.
Which is fantastic for the Blue Jays because you can put them out there every night, and provided you put even a half-decent outfield defense out there, you're good to go. Would you like to talk about a significant milestone as a Blue Jays record, and then as a single-season major league record?
Well, I actually mentioned it already, but It's not even a single season win. It is the major league record for consecutive starts with six innings or more and five or fewer hits is 10. And he has tied it. It was Johnny Cueto and Jake Arrieta in 2014 and Johan Santana in 2004. They're the only people who have done it. If you take away innings limits, there it goes as high as 22 for Tony Cingrani. But if you don't care about how long a guy goes, a hit total stat doesn't really matter.
Yeah, we yanked him because he walked a dozen people and he couldn't get through the fifth. Very cool. Very cool. So if you think you're watching something weird in Marco Estrada, there's too many Marcos in on the Blue Jays. Marco. You are. Keep watching. Aaron Sanchez. There was news that wasn't exactly news. It was just mentioned by John Gibbons that Aaron Sanchez is going to have to go still to the bullpen.
Yeah, that was sad.
It was.
And I think it was news. It was always expected, but it wasn't ever the case.
So is this just the manager hedging his bets and saying, all right, if I say it now and we do it, you're not all going to freak out when we do it. But if I say it now and then we never get around to it, nobody's going to come back and say, well, you said he was going to the bullpen.
No, they probably will. You know, someone will come in and say, hey, you lied to us back then. He'd be like, yeah, we don't need to anymore.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting and somewhat disconcerting to hear him the way he discussed it. He said he's coming up on his innings. You know, he's throwing a lot of innings. Why are we still concerning ourselves with how many innings a pitcher throws? It's like if Aaron Sanchez was pitching like he was at the beginning of 2015 and he was going five innings to start but still throwing 110 pitches, would that mean he stays in the rotation longer?
I don't know.
I mean, the way that he's talking about it, it sounds like it. I was hoping that they would just be monitoring fatigue. And this could just be John Gibbons just speaking colloquially because he doesn't really want to go into detail. But if it is innings, it's insane.
And that the word innings, does not really come up when Ross Atkins is asked these questions.
Yeah, or Mark Shapiro. They, you're right. They do say, like, we're going to monitor him and see how he's fatiguing, see how he's recovering and all that, which is the way you should be doing it.
And I would tend to think that because the real decision about when to move him is ultimately in their hands, maybe they've indicated to John Gibbons that we don't see a way to get him all the way through the season in the starting rotation. So you should plan to make some other plan for your starting rotation, and we will tell you when that's most likely to happen. You know what I mean?
Although if they don't see a way, it would imply that they are looking at hard numbers because there's no reason he's not showing any signs of fatigue yet. So how could they really know they can't do it? But your general point, I think, is right. Is they've portrayed or conveyed something to Gibbons, and he's like, yeah, okay, I'm just going to tell people this.
Yeah. Someone described it as falling on a grenade as a manager. It's like, I'm going to answer this question because you asked it, and if it blows up, well, it blows up, but now Aaron Sanchez doesn't have to answer the question. Not that that's key, but I think that's helpful because I know Aaron Sanchez is not going to know the answer to the question until they come to him and tell him whatever it is they're basing it on. We've made the determination, you're moving. Like he's not going to be the one who goes, oh, I feel kind of tired, or no. I don't know about my curveball this week or these last two, three starts. I think maybe it's time to go to the bullpen. It's not his choice.
I would hope not. I'm good, Skip. Aaron, your right arm is not attached to the shoulder anymore. I'm good.
I'm lefty now, Skip. I've been talking to Venditti. It's all good.
I've been secretly training.
Yeah, it's always I'm good, Skip. That's the worst thing about pitchers is like, they all seem to believe, if you're honest, that's just one way to lose your job.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
And speaking as someone who pitches with shoulder pain all the time, 100% accurate.
I need a job, and I can't get it any other way. Oh, my goodness. Are there any other main line issues here that we have not covered for the offense and the defense?
It should be worth – well, not for the offense, no, but I think it should just be worth mentioning that the bullpen is pitching better as well. Chavez and Storen have sort of turned it around a bit. They've changed the way they've been attacking, and it's working, so that's kind of interesting. I wrote a piece about this for Baseball Perspectives Toronto. So
what a coincidence. Detail,
go read it.
What a coincidence. there's going to be somebody who isn't on the podcast who we're going to hear from on the staff this week. Like, why didn't you plug my piece? Oh, well, you didn't ask.
No, it's, so I said, well, just because we're on the podcast and you're not.
Too bad. You know what the next question is going to be. All right. speaking of questions, I think we should maybe go to the ones from the listeners that actually interest people. We, of course, solicited for questions, and we received a few.
Yeah, we did. It was nice.
Want to start with my buddy Brian?
Sure.
Brian, long-time questioner, also long-time listener, at big_B_SR, has, with Estrada, Happ, and Stroman, do we really need Sanchez as a starter in the playoffs? Seems better suited for the bullpen then.
I think the answer to that is, well, I guess need is probably not, I mean, it's probably accurate, right? They don't need Sanchez, but he would be the best guy there at this point, other than Marco Estrada, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of want your upside in your rotation, especially because in the playoffs, your relievers get constant rest, so you don't really need as many of them. That being said, having an elite guy coming in the sixth and seventh innings and throwing two innings at a time is very valuable.
Also, yeah. I think you don't know for sure because Marco Estrada has been, as we just observed, very, very, very consistent at what he does. Stroman and Happ have had really great stretches, but have also had some inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, when you come to the playoffs and you're in September, let's say we, God forbid, actually get there again.
God forbid.
Well, all that stress, I don't know if I can take it again.
Worth it.
Okay, so God willing, get there again, I guess. Is
there
the
we
right
go.
Phrase. The question is, if Stroman has had a poor September for some reason, or if Happ appears to be gassed or someone is injured, you're thinking a little larger scope, and yes, you absolutely need to have Sanchez as someone who can give you six or seven innings. So I don't know if that's their other thought, is if the team's in really good shape, you put Sanchez in the bullpen to save him for the playoffs.
It would be tough, though, because they have to stretch him back out. But you're right. It could be we're doing that. They could stretch him out in September, especially depending on how far or close they are to winning a division. Exactly. But you mentioned this about Stroman, that he hasn't been pitching that well. He did make adjustments in his last start, though, which were very encouraging. We mentioned, I think it was on the last podcast, about how his curveball and his slider were exactly the same, essentially, now.
Yep.
He's gone back to throwing the hard slider. Intentionally. He even said it's like he decided just to throw the hard one. So it's not moving quite as much, but it comes in 87 miles an hour. So now there's a separation between his breaking balls.
Yay.
Yeah. And hey, it worked. He had a really, really good game. I mean, it was against the Phillies, so
yeah,
it doesn't mean that much.
Say, you take a little change of approach and mix it up with baseball's worst offense. And
tends to help.
Boom. At least it's a confidence booster. Now he won't be afraid to throw the hard one.
Agreed.
Next question. Which one do you want?
Well, just while we're on Stroman, this is from at O Caliente, Senzel 3000. Stroman's lack of innings limit. Why? Missed too many innings last year? Basically, why does Sanchez have one and not Marcus Stroman?
That's an interesting question. Do we have a firm answer on that?
Well, I think the biggest answer for that is just simply that he has, in his career, had much higher innings totals than Aaron Sanchez has. Aaron Sanchez had never topped, I believe it was 120 some odd innings, 130 innings
thrown around.
Sorry?
I think 133 keeps getting thrown around as the number, but I don't know what year it's from.
Right. Whereas Aaron Sanchez in 2014 threw 165 innings across Buffalo and the Blue Jays. So he can easily get up to 190 or 200 without really pushing him beyond what he's done before.
Okay, you just said Sanchez. I assume you meant Stroman.
I meant to say Marcus Stroman.
See, there are too many guys with S's. Yes.
Marcus Stroman threw 165 innings across Buffalo and Toronto in 2014.
So the fact that he missed a year is not as big a deal because we know he's done it at least once.
Yeah, his arm has been conditioned to go deep. And he threw a lot of innings when he was at Duke as a starter. So that's the reason.
Q. Next question from... Oh, sorry. Did you say who that last one was from?
Yeah, that was from Senzel 3000.
Right. This one is from Jay Swamco. I like that Twitter name.
Good old Whamco. They were awesome.
Oh, man. Those were the day. Dave Walsh says, who at this point looks to be a stud starter the Jays could go after? Now, this man is what we call an optimist. Because 2 weeks ago, were people not attempting to sell the valuable assets of this team at the deadline so we could get something back for the farm system?
2 weeks ago, people were doing it after they lost that first game to Philadelphia. Very reactionary.
Not optimists.
But the answer is nobody. This is a horrible year for pitchers on the trade market. I think the best one is Rich Hill, and he's 36 years old and injured.
And is a modern fluke, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, was out of baseball forever, come back and dominate. Yeah. I mean, the other guy's Andrew Cashner, I guess. Irvin Santana. Grant Brisby actually wrote a piece about this, about how terrible the amount of starting pitchers available at the deadline. I mean, I guess the real answer is you hope that Oakland makes Sonny Gray available, because other than that, it's really slim pickings.
Yeah, for the traditional rent-a-pitcher, the 2 months and he hits free agency guy, right? So
yeah, they don't exist. It's not like last year where you had Price and Cueto available.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a year and a bit, you're going to have to give up something significant. And I don't know if the Jays actually have, quote unquote, something significant in the farm system at the moment.
Unless it was Dalton Pompey.
Who seems to be hitting better in Buffalo, I've been told by sources. I mean, you can't trade Dalton Pompey now, though, because you are one injured outfielder away from desperately needing Dalton Pompey every day.
I'm not suggesting they do it. I'm just saying if they needed to, he is a piece that is available. Because Anthony Alford has no trade value at the moment because he keeps getting injured. He's out with a concussion at the moment. I mean, there are other pieces that are good, but there aren't those elite pieces, those maybe not A-plus prospects, but A-minus or B-plus guys that they had last year, like Norris or Hoffman, that could be headliners for those kind of guys.
Cool. That, I believe, is all the questions I see.
Yeah, not a lot of questions this week, but that's okay.
You can help us next week, people. Be famous. Get your name right on the podcast. Gain Twitter followers. Anything could happen, really, right?
Sure, maybe. Get the Turf Pod bump?
The Turf Pod bump. That is just sounds a strange like a dance. Phrase. Yeah, what are we doing? I had a cliche that we did not have time for last week.
Okay.
And I normally have a big rant about cliches, but I think I would like to engage you more on this one. The cliche that comes up a lot is, he's protecting the plate. Buck and Tabby love a guy who protects the plate. My observation is that what they are observing and what they're describing are two very, very different things. Because they think that Kevin Pillar and Russell Martin, and to some lesser extent, I'm sure, Justin Smoke, protect the plate by swinging at everything they possibly can with two strikes.
Right. This is taking the idea to its extreme. Because you're right, you still have to be somewhat selective, even if there are two strikes. If a pitch is a foot and a half off the plate, don't swing.
That's protecting the opposite batter's box. And it can fend
or sometimes your own batter's box if it's Kevin Pillar.
It can fend for itself. Also, if you swing at a pitch that almost hit you, like Kevin Pillar, how can that be protecting the plate?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, the whole concept of protecting the plate is just that umpires are bad. So with two strikes, if a pitch is close, you swing at it and try to foul it off or do something with it. Not if it's close.
My take it also is, if a pitch is going to be what you think is a strike, but it's not the pitch you thought you were going to hit, i.e. you were geared up for the fastball and you suddenly realize, oh, he's going to drop a curveball in here, I see the spin, then you need to protect the plate, i.e. get some kind of contact out of it.
Yeah, both of them. Basically, it's just like you don't want to get struck out looking.
Cool. I'm 100% in favor of that. What I don't understand is there's a perfectly good cliche that works in that situation. You should say that a guy is in swing mode.
You mean for the one that they're trying to use?
Yeah, that's what they mean. They mean he's in swing mode. They don't mean he's trying to protect the plate. Because swing mode is pitcher releases ball, bat flies forward.
Oh, it's like, yeah, this was like that. It was Darwin Barney. I think it was Jake Diekman who's facing, or Dykeman.
Yep.
And he had that 12 or 13 pitch at bat where he eventually struck out, which when Darwin Barney does that, it's usually really impressive. But he swung at, with three balls, pitches that were a foot and a half inside and outside. So while it was a great at bat, it was also pure swing mode. And all he had to do was basically throw a pitch in the dirt, and he probably would have struck him out.
Yeah, and a lot of really epic at-bats that go 10 pitches or more result from a guy getting himself into swing mode. And eventually the result is 100% what the batter does, because the pitcher is not really deceiving him anymore. He is just pumping baseballs in there until something gives, and the batter is like, I'm going to swing at everything. And it usually gets worse and worse.
But this is the difference between... Sorry, yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But this is the difference between the guys that you were mentioning and the Bautistas and the Encarnaciones and the Donaldsons. They will take ball four, even if they've swung at six straight 3-2 pitches that were in the strike zone.
Yes. And I think it comes from the fact that some of those guys really, really hate to swing the baseball bat. I know that sounds really funny, but when I watch Jose Bautista specifically, and he does have one of the lowest swing rates in the majors, he hates to swing. He only wants to swing one time, and he wants to hit it out of the baseball park and be done. It's a lot of work to swing more than once.
I like that efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't need to protect the plate so much. We can describe this other ways, because we've gone completely off the deep end with protecting the plate. We can retire that as a let's use it all the time cliche.
That was really a do-over disguised as a cliche.
Well, all the cliches are cliches, are do-overs as well, because my brain is melted by the time I realize how many times they use a cliche. All right, we do have a do-over. So tonight, Mike Wilner went on Twitter to discuss, and I don't know why he did this, but he just attempted to make a comment about Ichiro's 4,257th professional hit.
Well, yeah, which he got today.
Which is really cool for Ichiro, because as far as we know, other than Pete Rose, nobody has 4,200 anything hits at a level that is considered the top level wherever they were playing. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is fair.
And then Wilner said, why don't we add everyone else's AAA hits on, and then you can tell me if Ichiro has done something significant or not. Likening his time in Japan to time in AAA. First of all, do you think that's fair?
I mean, they say that Japan is basically, the overall level is better than AAA, but not quite the major league, so I wouldn't say that it's fair. But, I'll let you continue. Go ahead.
Well, and then people came back to him and said, well, are you saying that the 2,900 hits that Ichiro got in the majors are not significant, are not a significant thing? And then Wilner said, no, I never said that.
Oh.
So technically, he's correct. He never said that the 2,900 hits weren't significant. He was basically just saying he was unimpressed with the 4,257th hit because that one was not a significant number for him. But instead of clarifying or saying, oh, you must have misunderstood me, he decided to double down and not indicate to anyone what he really meant and just let them figure it out for themselves.
Yep.
Why you got to be like that, Mike?
He just does. By the way, what's very funny about this, you know how many games Pete Rose played in AAA?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
So if you add Pete Rose's AAA hits to his major league hits, he has 4,256. No. obviously you shouldn't add Ichiro's hit totals together to say he has more hits than Pete Rose, because they're two separate leagues, but it is still an incredible accomplishment for him.
Absolutely. And I think I understand the point about this particular hit is not a significant hit in the grand scheme of things, as it doesn't really pass anybody record wise. I get that. But there's a lot of ways to say that are a lot clearer and maybe don't make you come off as quite so, I think the word is, conceited. So that's why it's a do-over. Because nobody
asked... I didn't see all this for the record, so...
Nobody asked Mike Wilner to make that tweet. Nobody said, hey, what? Isn't it really cool and shouldn't you recognize... No, I highly doubt that. So here's your opportunity. Delete the tweet. And we won't ever talk about it again. Pretty simple.
Delete the tweet has such a nice ring to it.
It does, rhyme, doesn't it?
Nice cadence.
It's the good stuff. Oh. All right. We have moseyed on through all of our important topics rapidly. For yes. once. You and I didn't dawdle on anything.
No, we didn't. Blame Chris for not being here.
Is that because it's a good week? Is that why we didn't dawdle on anything? We didn't go, man, they just set themselves on fire.
No, I think it's because like it was a good week. So it's like, let's, you know, in sabbatical, it's like, all right, let's spend like just lots of time on this one good thing.
Let's look at it from every possible angle. I got to use my 9 runs hashtag a few times. And it wasn't for the opposing team. So that was pretty cool. Also, I've noticed something. When you score 5 runs and you hand it over to a leaky bullpen, horrible things happen. When you score 9 or 10 or 11 runs and the bullpen leaks anyway, it doesn't
still
seem
win.
So bad. It comes out okay in the end. That Baltimore series was a mess. As yes, a final thought, a total mess. And I have no idea what's going to happen when they go to Baltimore. Did you have a final thought for our friends out there in podcast land?
I do. Last week, we mentioned that the MLB first year player draft was coming up. And, well, it came and went. The Blue Jays took with a very different strategy, actually, than they've had in the past few years. They did not take a single high school pitcher in the first 10 rounds. And they took a bunch of college guys. Their first pick was TJ Zuik, which is an
interesting
name. Not
spelled the way you would think.
No. But Z-E-U-C-H, you know, big flame-throwing righty, maybe a future bullpen guy. They don't really know. But, you know, it's a different strategy, and we'll have to see how it works. For the record, they have signed him. They signed Zach Jackson, not that guy they drafted and traded for Lyle Overbay, a different one, and Bo Bichette. So they've signed some of these guys already, which is nice. They can get in and start playing pro ball. But the overall view seems to be that it was not a good draft. Keith Law said it was the worst of all 30 teams.
Now, I don't think K-Law has a problem with the Jays specifically, but he does have a problem with harsh opinions.
Yeah. Well, basically, his view was that given how much money they had to spend in the draft and who was available when they picked, he hated their choices.
And obviously, this is the new regime mixed with the old regime, so you're going to get a different...
Yeah, it's still
strategy.
Brian Parker running it, but it's also maybe new direction from the top. They want to probably refill some of the middle levels of the system, which were gutted by all the trades last year.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see.
That's the way with the draft every time. We'll see. And then 5 years later, it's kind of like, I don't even know what we saw.
That's true. They did not take Zach Birdie, by the way, which we mentioned last time.
Sad trombone sound, at least for those of the BP Toronto staff who were all keen on them giving that a shot.
Yep.
I had a final thought, and I've changed it.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. Jose Reyes was DFA'd by the Colorado Rockies.
Yes, he was.
So this sort of brings the end of the blockbuster 2013 trade, if I'm not mistaken, to Toronto. All the tailing ends have gone, because the three big pieces in that trade were Jose Reyes, Mark Burley, and Josh Johnson.
Who has not technically retired yet.
No, I don't know if perhaps he's coming back as a throw with his foot pitcher or something, but you can't withstand. And of course, John Buck retired, who went the other way. I did see that Jeff Mathis homered the other day.
He won the trade. Yeah, who'd have thought that he would be the last? Well, technically, I suppose Reyes could latch on with another team, but I'm guessing he's pretty toxic at the moment.
Yeah. The unfortunate result of the legal proceeding against him and then the suspension and everything else. But that is probably a way sadder end to the 2013 trade than I ever thought would happen. There was a lot of there was a whole lot of petering out there, was there not?
Yeah. Yeah, that it did not quite work out as anybody hoped. Well, anybody on the Blue Jays. It worked okay for the Marlins.
Who's left on the Marlins side?
Hechavarria is still there.
Nice.
And Nick Lino, I believe, is still there as well.
And where did Henderson Alvarez end up?
He's with Oakland now, but he pitched well for them until he got hurt. And they traded Desclafani to the Reds.
Like,
and Mrznik to the Astros.
Like Maple Keys in the fall. They just scatter everywhere eventually.
Yeah, so there, you need that's to explain that one for me.
Maple Keys in the fall?
Oh, that's what you said. No, yeah. No, I just heard you wrong. Oh,
okay. I'm like, you do know how it works with Maple Keys, right? You're Canadian, aren't you?
Josh is an American. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Reyes. I mean, he's still a good player, so I'm guessing some team will eventually take a chance on him, but it probably won't be until next year.
Indeed. All right, so time for the usual housekeeping. You can, of course, find us on iTunes, where we would love you to rate and or review the podcast. Is the survey over?
No, they still have one more week to do it.
One more week to complete our survey, where you could win a jersey of your choice. You can get a link to that at the podcast website. You can also find it at BP Toronto, correct? If you search around.
Yep. Yeah, and it only takes 2 or 3 minutes to fill out, so we'd appreciate getting your feedback.
Absolutely. Going to help us make the podcast a more streamlined animal. Are animals streamlined? All right, so you have been...
Zebras?
What?
I said zebras?
I don't think zebras are streamlined, Josh.
There's no lines. Go ahead.
Penguins are streamlined. You have been Josh Housem on the Twitter at Joshua Housem. I have been Greg Wisniewski on the Twitter at Coolhead2010. And this has been episode number 16 of Artificial Turf Wars. And we will see you next week.